to the next case this morning, which is United States v. Harper. Ms. Berry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Latoya Berry on behalf of the appellant defendant, Justin Harper. The main question today is why did the government say that they had no credible evidence for a drug amount or a distribution as it speaks to 2K2.1C. Then the court did adopt that paragraph, which made it into the pre-sentence report. Page 6 of the pre-sentence report, paragraph 18. We know that the government gets the case before any of us knows anything about it. They have the case. They determine what they're going to charge. Are we going to pursue the gun? Are we going to pursue the drugs? We have strong evidence on this or not. The government gets to decide, well, if we go on the back end, which is at sentencing, we can get hearsay in. We don't have to present the witness. We don't have to present the evidence. As we know, the rules are lax at sentencing, the federal rules of evidence. And in this case, that is exactly what the government did. They came with a charge on a gun offense. Specifically, making note in the pre-sentence report, Your Honors, we know that those things don't get there by chance, that the district judge is ordering probation to get all the background and to find out exactly what will be going on at sentencing. So, as they're saying, we don't have any evidence. The government relies solely on the testimony of Travis Garner. This person is not present at sentencing. They basically stowed away this witness, presented someone in their place, which was an officer, Officer Kirkpatrick, who couldn't answer half the questions. I asked the officer, you're sitting in the place of Mr. Garner. What is Mr. Garner's criminal history? I don't know. Well, was Mr. Garner selling drugs on the date in question, this October 5th date of 2011? I don't know. I wasn't there. Well, was Mr. Garner a drug dealer? He acknowledges that. Was Mr. Garner... what were some things going on as far as the scene? Was my client, Mr. Harper, undressed in a state of disarray? He was unclothed. He was there with his girlfriend. I don't know. I wasn't there. Well, this is the witness that the government has presented, and he can't answer some of the main questions that go to Mr. Garner and that go towards the scene. The last thing that I asked him was, well, did Mr. Garner cut a deal? He had obviously some sort of motivation towards making these statements. I don't know. I wouldn't know any of that.
But the problem here, it seems to me, is that Garner's statements that Mr. Harper was selling cocaine base out of the back bedroom with a firearm present was corroborated by the discovery of Mr. Harper, the drugs, and that gun in the bedroom.
Well, one of the main concerns here, Your Honor, in that regard, is that this wasn't my client's house. He did not live there. The house had two people that were living there. The officer acknowledged that and testified to that, Andre Hudson and Keith Long. One of those persons' fingerprints returned back on the drugs in question, on that heroin jar. And the record reflects that my client picked up his girlfriend that morning and went over to the house, was just there a couple of hours with his girlfriend. He only went to that house when he had a girl over, and that's exactly the state that they found him in, unclothed with his girlfriend, not selling drugs, not involved in any activity. The government did not present that witness. We never got to question Mr. Garner. We prepared our case in reliance on the fact that we would get to question Garner. We don't believe that they put forth a case that corroborated evidence, Your Honor. One of the things that the 2K2.1C guideline requires is that the drug amount be established, since we are talking in the context of a cross-reference to a drug offense. The drug amounts that the officer testified to were completely different than the drug amounts that were found in the house. The court below indicates that that was consistent. It wasn't consistent. There were 5 grams of heroin. The witness testified to 3 grams of heroin. There were 4 ounces, and I mean ounces, not grams, 4 ounces of cocaine found throughout the house in different locations. Inside of those people that were living there, inside of their clothes, inside of jackets, in the floorboards, in secret compartments, not out in the open. So that there's an issue, Your Honors, I believe, of dominion. This is not his house. I don't believe that the evidence supported the fact that
it wasn't his house. How often did he use it, though?
Well, he said only if he had a girl over, and he did on that day. So that there were people living in the house. The witness testified to that, that their belongings were in the house. They didn't present anything forward, like in the Grimm case, like in the Corral case, IDs, some sort of bill, some sort of document, some clothes and things that belong to the person, belong to my client. Those are things that would establish this is his house. Yes, he lives here, and he has control over everything in this house that's going on. A house that's more than just a drug house, a house that people are actively living in.
Can I ask you a question about Mr. Garner again? So at the sentencing, did you raise with Judge Murphy your discomfort about not being able to cross-examine Mr. Garner?
Well, Your Honor, it was
Evident from your questioning, I guess, but did you ask him if he was concerned about that? Did you ask him if he would continue the sentencing so you could see if you could get Mr. Garner there, or maybe he could even require Mr. Garner to be there if he was concerned about that? I'm just trying to get a picture of whether you raised any of these points with the judge, because I would say from my own experience in sentencing, and if I have real concerns about what an agent being a mouthpiece for a witness, I might require the witness to be there or tell the government I'm not going to rely on your testimony if I have real concerns about it. What I think may have happened here is that the corroboration, as Judge Robner points out, made the witness seem stronger than maybe he otherwise would have been if what he had said had only been half corroborated or less. But I'm just trying to get a picture of how you raised this.
Well, as we understood, it was the government's burden to present that they had the evidence. And
they did that, only they did it through an agent rather than the
Correct.
Actual witness.
So that we didn't call their witness because we didn't intend on presenting their case. Since it was their case, we didn't believe that they had met their burden. I would ask for some time reserved for rebuttal if there aren't any other questions.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Hall.
Good morning, Your Honors. Neil Hong on behalf of the United States, and we are respectfully requesting that this court affirm the appellant Justin Harper's sentence. The district court did not abuse discretion when it applied the 2K2.1 C cross-reference and then ultimately calculated Mr. Harper's base offense at 25. There's sufficient evidence available to the district court to find that there was enough connection between Mr. Harper's firearm and the drugs found in that house. Now, Mr. Harper was found in a bedroom, and next to him was his firearm underneath a nightstand. Above that nightstand was crack cocaine. Inside the closet of that bedroom was also crack cocaine.
You know, Mr. Hong, here's my concern in general. Given that firearms are commonly used in a wide variety of criminal undertakings, isn't there a real danger that government may rely on the easy-to-prove felon in possession charge to strap all kinds of crimes for sentencing purposes? I mean, is there a real limit on what crimes can be connected in this way to a firearms possession?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that that can be a danger, but submit that in this case, that's not what occurred. I wasn't the attorney below, so I'm not sure what went all into deciding what to ultimately charge. But there is a danger of that, but in this case, that did not go behind the charging decision in this case.
Isn't Garner's statement suspect, in that it was made so long after the arrest, yet it purports to describe what happened the day before the arrest? I mean, was Garner questioned at any earlier time regarding Harper's activities? Is that in the record somewhere?
In the records, I believe, in case he was interviewed twice. He had an interview and he was proffered, and then he gave consistent statements with what was found. It does come sometime after, but it was very consistent what was found, what was physically found in that house. And Judge Murphy made a determination that those statements were credible in light of all the evidence that was presented before him. Not only did Judge Murphy find that those statements are credible, but the appellant also had a reasonable opportunity to rebut those. He was thoroughly cross-examined, and Mr. Garner was available to be called, and it was the decision of attorney below that the agent who had testified to the physical evidence and that Agent Kirkpatrick had accounted for all that Garner would have testified anyway, that putting on Garner may have been just cumulative, and that's why the decision not to put him on was made. But that didn't stop. That would not have stopped the appellant from objecting or raising something below. If you talk about a few other points that they raise in their brief, the 2K2.1C cross-reference does not require that a finding that an attempt or conspiracy needs to be made. The application note itself says that if a defendant used or possessed a firearm or ammunition in connection with the commission or attempted commission, in this case it was a commission, and it would refer you then to 2X2.1 and then ultimately to 2D1.1, where they ultimately calculate the base offense at 25. Also point out the district court did not err when it made a drug quantity finding because it had adopted the PSR. And generally, adopting a PSR is sufficient to make a finding, and that's where the district court got the 2 ounces of crack cocaine and the 3 ounces of heroin. Your Honors has no further questions. I will yield the rest of my time, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Counsel. How much time? You have 1 minute.
As the court pointed out, there is a danger here where we have such a large passage of time between the time of the incident and then these statements come up from Garner. This court in Ritzema and in the Artley and McCoy cases pointed out that danger. The fact that things on a gun case can come in from years past, I think that leads into the constitutional argument. This court has admonished against charging offenses in this way in the Artley and McCoy case. The fact that that the government can seek an enhancement on the back end at sentencing. The 2K2.1C guideline specifically directs that the government seek a more serious offense, a higher guideline. And I think that's stepping on the toes of the Constitution when we're talking about a jury violation. I mean, you have to put forth your more serious case at sentencing in order to meet the 2K2.1C. I think that's a direct violation. I would ask that this court remand this case back to the district court for sentencing without the 2K2.1C.
Thank you, Counsel. And you were appointed, you have the appreciation of this court for your fine representation.
Thank you, Your Honor, very much.